You're listening to Cattails.
Hi, you're listening to Cattails and I'm Kat. In this show, I'm joined by Sepp Osley, frontman and co-founder of progressive rock band Blurred Vision, the week in which their second album, Redemption, is due to be launched. We chat about how the world has changed very little since Sepp and his family fled a war-torn Iran in the 1980s, how the band came to prominence through adapting Pink Floyd's Another Brick in the Wall into a protest song, and why John Lennon and Bob Dylan have been such an influence on their music. This is The One with Sepp Osley. Welcome to the show, Sepp. Lovely to speak to you. So, yes, very strange times we're living in. And we were just saying there about postponing this from yesterday, which we were going to be recording our interview. But with this blackout Tuesday in response to the terrible killing over in America, it just seemed appropriate to talk another day, didn't it?
Certainly did, yeah. I don't think anyone around the world that saw and what those horrible events and the tragic event of his death would disagree. I mean, it's amazing that, you know, everybody around the world is coming together in support of something so important that's hopefully finally hit that moment where a real change is going to come after centuries of oppression upon the African American people. And certainly for us, we want to support that in any way we can. And the greatest way we can is through our music, of course.
And really, this is where your roots lie, don't they, Sepp? I mean, it's, I've been looking back at your history here and where you actually started. And I understand that yourself and your brother fled war-torn Iran back in the 80s. So actually, you're not, you're not new to uprisings and everything that's going on in terms of trouble, are you?
No, not at all. I was born into it. And strangely, my musical and artistic career began being thrusted into the center of a revolution that took place in Iran in 2009, 2010. And again, it was our musical response that was the only way for us to really show support. And it did bring a lot of awareness towards the situation. It's the exact same thing now, you know. I never would have imagined ever in my life that seeing the horrible atrocities committed by the Islamic Republic of Iran upon its people and unleashing the military upon them for unrest is now taking place in the United States of America. I couldn't fathom that moment, and yet here we are. And a lot of that is definitely connected to the fact that there's a horrible, vicious man sitting at the top of the throne in the U.S. And with all my hope, it is that he loses this election and the people move towards a different path for themselves in America and around the world.
You've said the point there about it being the people, hope the people move it. And it's at the end of the day, it is down to the general public, isn't it, in whatever country you're in, to be able to voice their opinion. And you hope that there is free speech and you hope there is democracy as a platform to allow you to do that, don't you?
Certainly. It's always down to the people. I think it's been that way for decades, for centuries. It's the human nature, and all the good that we have within us seems to shine in the darkest moments of our lives. And that shining comes from humanity coming together to stand in resistance against tyranny and injustice. And seeing that happen now, I think what this pandemic has done is put a lot of things into perspective for us as a human race. What is really important as we move towards the future? Is it the way we were sort of in the rat race of the past, or are we going to take a completely different approach to how we run our lives and how we want our fellow man to live? And that is certainly, I think, happening now, where people are realizing that we cannot move forward and go on as it was in the past.
I totally agree. And it's almost like you've got to wipe the slate clean, haven't we, and start afresh and say, do we want the future to be like the past? And we have that choice now, don't we?
We do. We do. It's with all of this chaos and madness around us, there seems to be a great sense of hope. I certainly feel it. I think many people around the world do as well, that this is the moment that we need to seize, because we've been shown something that we'd never seen before. We've been shown that a change can happen and we can react to devastating moments the way we need to react to them. And so moving forward, bringing people together and standing up against those that want to divide us is something that is paramount to the advancement of us as a human race and the protection of our planet moving forward. And I am certainly incredibly hopeful for those days to come.
I am as well. I'm with you. And let's hope that, you know, there's people who are in a position of influence. You know, they do take up that baton. And in a way, you are in that same position, albeit in a obviously a slight less influential position than, say, Donald Trump. However, you have got a voice with your music that can touch a big audience, and you're getting a tremendous following now. Do you feel some sense of, not responsibility, but purpose with your music now that wasn't there before?
Strangely enough, like I said earlier, my career began revolving around this stuff. I think what is unique about this entity of ours, this little entity called Blurred Vision, is that we didn't start in a way that, you know, sort of went to the masses with a very light approach, gained success and sense of popularity, and then decided to move into social activism and raise our voice. Right from the get-go, this is what this band has stood for. And I vowed right from the start, when we did begin with that remake of Another Brick in the Wall, directed at the regime of the Islamic Republic in Iran, I vowed that this was the way I wanted to move into the future for myself as a human being and as an artist, to always speak out against injustice. And our music has been on that path right from the get-go, and will continue to do it. So it's not a sense of responsibility. It's just, I feel like it's the only way I can be true to myself is to combat these things when they arise, and use our music to make those statements.
And a lot of people have done that in the past. I mean, I noticed here that you were actually doing some sort of gathering there for John Lennon's birthday last year. And he springs mm-hmm. to mind as somebody who has in the past been a vocalist for peace. And, you know, Give Peace a Chance is the greatest one that we can think of that springs to mind. But has that been a deliberate?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And has that been a deliberate act of yours to actually look at other role models who have gone before you and said, well, actually, let's take that and you know, add our voice to it?
Well, I like to always think that my education came through the School of Rock and Roll, and my professors were the heroes and the legends that I've always looked up to. Like you mentioned just now, the great John Lennon, Bob Marley, Bob Dylan, so many artists that inspired generations, inspired their own generation, and then through their acts and through their legacy, through their music, carry on and inspire generations to come. And that's something that's always been incredibly important to me on a social note, to use this great power that music is, this great entity that we have, to bring people together, because I think it's the one thing that can completely shatter the walls and build bridges within humanity. And it's a great force, and I've always looked up to those great heroes of mine in the past to inspire me as an artist moving forward, and the songs that I write and how I just perceive life in general. I'm very much influenced by those great human beings.
And why shouldn't you be? This is the role that you're walking in, some very big footsteps, aren't you? And that's a big challenge for you in one respect, but actually it sounds like the time is right for somebody else to take up that baton and move it forward. Yeah, it sounds like you're
absolutely
ready. You're ready for it. Yeah.
I'm ready to take charge and join the movement, have others join the movement that I've been on, and just continue to collectively move forward into a progressive and unified future, certainly.
The interesting thing for me, though, is I get all that completely. I know the history, and I've been reading up. It's a fascinating story that you have. The juxtaposition to that for me was actually when you listen to your music, it's very uplifting. So despite the roots in being an activist, let's call it activist, but you know, that voice of of oppression or the people or against society or against convention or whatever, it's actually very uplifting. Has that been a deliberate thing, or was it just that's the kind of music that you enjoyed making?
As always, writing songs, it tends to come out very naturally. I've always sort of been a songwriter that I've never been able to force myself into getting inspired or trying to write something. It just tends to flow out and pour out. And certainly the idea of writing songs that perhaps might touch on very deep subjects and difficult subjects to grasp, they always have a sense of hope, because just naturally as a human being myself, my character, I'm a very optimistic person. So writing lyrics that address something dark, but then also certainly and most gratifyingly leave me as a songwriter feeling hopeful and optimistic for the future. And it just seeps into the songs naturally. And of course, I've been inspired by all the great pop music of in history, especially from here in Britain. And so I like to always have the songs connect with people first on a soul level, hit them in the heart, and perhaps maybe subliminally eventually start thinking about what the lyrical content and how deep it might be is.
Yeah, I get that. I initially was tapping my feet to all this, and I was going, it's also like listening, getting absorbed in the tunes, and it was almost psychedelic, really, in a way, that electronic kind of pop feel that you've got to it. But the more I listened, and then I was listening to the lyrics. I love listening to lyrics because I'm very much a word person as well as that musical sound. I think it's the two elements, and some people forget that, don't they? And the more I got absorbed into that, I could feel what you were saying, and it was. Yes, so by the end of it was a moving experience, and I suppose that's where you're going.
Thank you very much. That's certainly what I hope will be the exact reaction of everybody out there that listens to our music. That's wonderful to hear.
Oh, that's good. That's good. I'm glad I got it straight away.
Straight away.
So you're living over here now in the UK, are you, Sepp? Because you're obviously with your brother and your family over in Canada for quite a few years, weren't you? What's brought you over to the UK?
Well, I've always had a love affair with this country, and certainly with London. Oddly enough, it was here in London that our career really kicked off in 2010, because we were up for a music video award here in London at the Soho Shorts Film Festival. And upon stepping foot on this land, I sort of knew within me and in my heart that perhaps I had finally found the place that I feel most at home, the way I did, when I was born and as a very young child in Iran, for the first time having an attachment to a place. It was a wonderful feeling, and it just progressed. And I'm so thankful that I was eventually 5 years later, on the release of our debut album, able to finally move over here and begin my new journey in a new place that I call my home.
Oh, that's lovely. But of course, you had to leave your brother Sol over in Canada. You didn't have to. He chose, presumably, to stay there.
That's right.
The reason I'm mentioning him, of course, is because I believe he was also part of Blurred Vision to start with.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, with your move over here, you've had a bit of a change of lineup.
We have, yeah. And, of course, a pivotal role as a co-founder of the group with me and a co-songwriter. Sol and I began this whole venture, and apart from being my blood brother, of course he was my musical partner. But as everything in all different relationships, you go in different directions at one point, and that's what happened for us. And my move here changed a lot of things and sort of made him reflect on what he wanted to do for his future. And so it was just a natural thing. And in in the turn of all of those events, I was fortunate enough to meet some of the best musicians here in London, who I now call my musical brothers in arms. And we are creating the music and carrying on this journey that we have in this band called Queer Vision, and all London boys. So I guess I'm the only import in the band now. It's now a three-quarter of a British group.
And so it's sort of like phase two for Blurred Vision then, isn't
Certainly.
It?
Certainly, absolutely, absolutely. Blurred Vision 2.0.
Yeah, that's right. So, of course, you've got your new album coming out on the 5th of June, which is only a couple of days away as we speak. So tell me about that, because some of that was actually recorded a little while ago before the change of lineup, wasn't it? How have you put all that together?
Yeah, going back to what we talked about earlier about sort of very hopeful and optimistic music still coming out of dark times, writing this album, I was most probably in the darkest place that I've ever been in that I can remember. Just mentally, I was struggling a lot and going through deep bouts of depression. There was a lot of changes happening around me, and through all of that darkness, a set of songs that are just so uplifting poured out, and in so many ways I think they saved me from those dark wells that I was falling into, and it turned into this wonderful piece of music now that I am so thrilled to finally be putting out in an album that could only have one title to it. And which hit me, and I knew it was the right time, which is, of course, redemption. And it's just a word that makes so much sense for the time we're living in now, with everything happening around us, this idea that redeeming ourselves seems to be the course of the future for everyone as we move forward. And we recorded it in Toronto, and the old band members were involved, and certainly myself and my producer were at the center of it, piecing it all together. Of course, Terry Brown, the legendary Terry Brown, whose birthday it is today, actually, which is
exciting.
Yeah, happy birthday, Terry. Yeah, and we really pieced this album together, and it's an album that I think will hopefully, if it did to me. What it did, then I'm hoping that even one person out there that hears it, that perhaps it'll take them out of that darkness. I will know that I've pretty much achieved what I needed to do with this record.
That's really powerful. I love that, Sepp. I love the fact that it's actually a record of the time, but it's also your own personal journey, which is probably why when I was listening to it, I could relate so clearly to that, because it touches you on an emotional level, as I was saying before, which is, which is what you're trying to do, and move people on an emotional journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. It's a very strange thing. It's like on the first album, on our debut album, we were looking outwards to the world and making commentary through the music on what was happening in the world, whereas this second record was all about internal, and it was my own path and feelings that poured out, and like you said, that tends to, I think, connect with people in a more visceral way than perhaps in other means of writing songs.
So if you had to sort of like choose one off the album that was, I'm not gonna say a favorite, because you probably haven't, because it's a bit of a journey for you, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
If we were to showcase one, which one would you say that's the must listen to for the first one?
Well, it's difficult. I mean, there's this tune called Magdalena, which is a dance rock stadium anthem of grand proportions that just will make you want to dance. It's very rhythmic and pulsating rhythm to it. And that's so different from a track like What Have I Become, which was the song that I think in the most deepest way was when I realized that I can shed myself of these dark thoughts, and oddly enough, that was the song that I invited a wonderful gospel choir to join us, a 20-piece gospel choir that sing on the track with us. And we just recently did a lockdown version of the track with all of them from around the world singing. It's almost like a confession, you know, going to the church of rock and roll, really, yeah. to heal ourselves. And so that was that one's very special as well. But again, they're like my babies. I love them all. I leave it to people to decide which ones they certainly have the most connection to.
Oh,
Hi, this is Seth Osley of Blurred Vision, and you are listening to Cat Tales.
What Have I Become actually stood out for me because it stopped that rhythm that I started on with one day, and then it's kind of like, hold on a second, it's not all going to be uplift. It's sort of, hold on, think. Beautiful, beautiful.
Interesting, beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
So you had this sort of like tribute to John Lennon last year that you were involved in, or did you actually organise all that, Seth?
Well, when we wrote Dear John, which was our tribute to the great man, it was released on our debut album in 2015. And ever since then, I always wanted to have this idea of this concert that would bring together, you know, different artists, different generations to celebrate the great man's birthday, his legacy. And finally, last year, it all just came into fruition. And we partnered up and teamed up with Hard Rock Hotel in Marble Arch, and raised as much as we could for War Child, which of course is something that is very dear to my heart, the charity. And that's really how it came about, and it turned into this amazing night of love and unity, and it was truly an unbelievably special evening for everybody there, fans and artists. And I was able to have Nick Van Eet of Cutting Crew with us, and Steve Hogarth of Marillion, and bring together the music video, which brought, you know, Peter Gabriel and P.P. Arnold and so many artists, Paul Young, just Maxi Jazz, just such a variety of great heroes of mine to wish John a happy birthday in the music video. And we're certainly planning on doing it again this year. It's become, it's going to be an annual thing, and we're going to be very innovative on how we make this show take place on the 9th of October, John's birthday.
Yes, of course, he'd be 80. He would have been 80 if he'd obviously 80, been this plane still. So that's going to be one heck of a party by the sound of it.
It's going to be hopefully one of the grandest celebrations of the year for us all to unite wherever we are in the world around this unbelievably influential and important human being in all of our lives.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be it's going to be one to watch, isn't it? So let's hope that Certainly. Can actually go ahead with obviously everything that's going on at the moment with COVID. It's ruining everybody's plans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, you had your tour all sort of like ready and raring to go. Well, a few gigs that you were sort of planning on doing at least anyway, weren't you? But I guess that's all put on hold now. Have you got any plans for when this is all lifted?
Certainly we'll be promoting this new album, Redemption, once we're all set free and able to put these concerts on and tours and all of that, and also playing songs from the soundtrack album we released just 2 months ago. So we've been really getting the music out there, and I think once we're able to tour, we will be playing so much of this material for fans out there that are going to come and see us, and we can't wait to be able to gather together again in a festival, in a field, in a room at however many size, you know, sweating and having a great time and being surrounded by love.
Absolutely.
And music.
Completely agree. And it's going to happen. It's just going to be when it does.
Certainly.
We're all just going to be ready for it, aren't we, I think, when it finally does.
Oh, are we going to be ready?
So, Seth, where can people find out about all your bits and pieces, your tour, your story, and obviously Dear John for John Lennon? Where do they go?
Just head to blurredvisionmusic.com, where you'll find us. We're, you know, Instagram, Facebook, all of our social media is there, or you can just search us online. And of course, if you search Blurred Vision Music on Google, it'll bring up a million pages of 10 years of a story for people to discover if they haven't discovered us yet.
That's brilliant. And of course, on the 5th of June, Redemption is going to be out, so they can get their own copy and experience what we've been talking about today.
Absolutely. Yeah, I cannot wait to hear the reaction of fans, old and new, on what they think of this very, very different and the new sound of this band.
Oh, amazing. So thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to talk to you today about it all, because it has been incredible. And
my absolute pleasure.
I don't think I need to wish you luck on it all, because I'm sure it's all going to come your way, Sepp, no doubt.
Always accept and embrace love with luck with open arms. I certainly do. And thank you so much for your kind words and your time.
Oh, no problem at all.
Thank you so much, Kat. That was absolutely lovely.
You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.